Let me first thank Alessia and Mark, firstly for putting together this meeting and also for inviting me. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And once again, yeah, my name is Luca Boninvanden and I'm a postdoc at Nordita in Sweden. Actually, Alessia will put the timer, so we start now so I can check. Okay, from zero. Okay, so basically this talk is going to be about perturbative QFT approach to quantum gravity. And the organizers had me asked me to give a review about non-local QFT approaches to quantum gravity. I would be happy to do so, but since in the last year, I would say, I changed a bit my opinion about this topic, I would like to give also an assessment on the critical open issues. And then I will try to go back to local QFT and make some comment on that. So since, of course, I'm going to show slides with the formulas, I would like just to, for clarity, to fix the convention here. I will always work in D equal to 1 plus 3 space-time dimension, mostly positive metric convention for the signature, natural units, and whenever you will see some negative, some cosmological constant, I always assume that that's not negative. So I will try to be as close as possible to the real world. At least what we observe. And we have already heard a few times in the last talks that general relativity, if quantized as a quantum field theory, is not renormalizable. But of course, from a perturbative QFT perspective, I think it's very natural to ask the question, okay, GR is non-renormalizable, but can we, of course, ask for a still renormalizable theory, a renormalizable quantum field theory of the gravitation interaction in the same way we do also for other interaction in the standard model. And as we have also heard in the previous talk, and also actually yesterday in the discussion session, if you assume metric compatibility, like, and no torsion, and we work in D equal to 4 space-time dimension, there is actually a unique, strictly renormalizable quantum field theory of the gravitation interaction, which is basically just Einstein-Hilbert plus Ricci's color square and Weyl square term. And as we heard before, this additional term, they also introduce extra degrees of freedom. We have a massive spin zero, massive spin zero degree of freedom, whose mass expression is given by this formula. And what I find also interesting about this model is that, this theory is that from this R squared term, we get a natural candidate for the inflaton field in the L universe cosmology. And actually up to here, this model sometimes is called Starobinsky model, but in my opinion, this is not just a model because it can be embedded in a renormalizable theory if we add this extra term here. However, as we have heard before, from this term, we get also an additional degree of freedom, which is a bit unusual as compared to other fields that we usually have in the standard model of particle physics without gravity, because here we get a massive spin to ghost, where with ghost, again, we mean simply like some field whose kinetic term has a minus sign, okay? And what I would like also to highlight here is that, I mean, usually we always neglect cosmological constant when we discuss QFT here around flat space. But one thing to highlight is that if we take into account the effect of the cosmological constant, the mass of the spin to field depends on lambda. What I mean with that is that if you write down the first Pauli Lagrangian for this extra mode, you will get a mass term where there is an explicit lambda dependence inside. And actually, this will be important for something that I will say towards the end, okay? But I wanted to just highlight this fact. So I had some slides where I explained why ghost usually can be problematic in both at the classical and quantum level, but since we have heard already in the first talk by Astrid some comment about instabilities, classical instability to ghost, and also by Bob Holdom about quantum stability, I will just basically skip these slides to not repeat the same thing. I'll just flash here. One thing is that, for instance, if we consider a scalar model, okay, with four derivatives, because we have some box square, and we do standard prescription, which means like the standard Feynman prescription, which is the causal one, and we assume some Hilbert space with all positive norms. This is what we usually do in standard QFT, the physical space with positive norm. And we compute some amplitudes. What happens is that we can have a violation of unitarity, because for instance, if we focus on some elastic scattering process and we apply the optical theorem, we get some positivity constraint. But if we have a ghost, what happens is that applying the standard prescription, like Feynman prescription and positive norm, we would get some non-negative, some imaginary part that can be also negative because of this extra Gauss degree of freedom, and this would signal a violation of unitarity. Since I will go back to this slide towards the end, I decided to show it anyway, because of course one can try to make sense of the Gauss by changing something, as Bob Oldham showed before, but I would like to comment more about that later. So then go to the main point of the talk. So this conference is about quantum puzzles, or quantum gravity puzzles. So the puzzle that I would like to address and discuss in this talk is basically the Gauss puzzle in perturbative quantum gravity. And so the idea is like, is this Gauss really problematic or not? Can we make sense of it? And I think the fact that there is already this unusual feature where we go to perturbative quantum gravity, I think is very interesting to try to understand what we can learn from this puzzle. And I think at least, I mean, this talk, I would like to consider two type of approaches based on the so-called correspondence principle, right? Because usually when we, at least when quantum mechanics was started, we had in mind that we always can have some classical system that we quantize, okay? And this classical system will also be the classical limit of the quantized system that we constructed. So there is this correspondence between classical quantum. But it may also happen that this correspondence principle fails in some energy scale, for instance, regime. And this can be the case. I think QCD also is an example where the standard idea of correspondence principle does not really apply. So I would like to divide the discussion in this way. So like approach which satisfy correspondence principle, and then go back to approach that does not satisfy the correspondence principle. And so what I mean with an approach to perturbative quantum gravity where the correspondence principle applies, I mean basically that, of course, already at the classical level, this Gauss should be harmless, should not create problems, or should just disappear. Because then I quantize the theory and I know that since I don't have stability at the classical level, it may happen that no Gauss instability will be generated at the quantum level. Okay, that's the idea. And one way to put it forward, this idea, is to still keep the diffeomorphism invariant. But the idea is basically the following, that maybe the fact that the Gauss appears is just an artifact of some truncation. And maybe if I keep into account the whole structure in the Lagrangian, the Gauss will not be there in reality. So that's how, at the classical level, you can think of maybe remove a Gauss degree of freedom. And in particular, of course, to do that, I think you need to give up something. And here, related to what I was also asked to talk about, I will basically focus on give up locality as a standard principle of quantum field theory. And so I will allow like terms which are not local in derivatives and try to see whether with this type of Lagrangian one can construct Gauss-free gravitational theories. And then I will discuss some of the characteristics and open issues. After that, I will go back again to the case in which we keep locality. But if you keep locality, which means we just keep the quadratic gravity with four derivatives that I showed at the beginning, which was discussed also previously in the previous talk, if you keep locality, okay, we have in principle, just if we take the Lagrangian, some Gauss there. So what we should hope is that maybe some quantum features will make the Gauss harmless. And then I think a good question to ask is still like, what is then the classical limit, or better, how is the classical dynamics of other fields affected by this Gauss? And this should be, I think, still understood. And my point in this second part here is just basically to refer to a bit of the previous talk and also some work by John Donoghue and make some comments that may be useful for discussion later, okay, which is just based on my personal opinions. So let's start with the corresponding principle applies, approach one. And I don't want to be too technical, so I'll just give the idea. Then make some comments, and then we will go to the approach two. The important thing is that the message of how it works is clear. So I will try to highlight the main idea. So to do that, I will start with a scalar field, and then I will jump to gravity, because I think it's simpler. So the question is the following. We have said already that if you take just a four derivative scalar field theory, of course you have a ghost. But more generally, you can write down some type of Lagrangian of this type, whose propagator will be of this type. And then, of course, the question is there any non-trivial function of f such that the propagator is ghost-free? And not just some crazy function, but something which also gives some consistent low-energy limit. And of course, the idea here is that maybe there is some such a function, and only when you maybe expand and truncate this function at some energy scale, you will see the ghost as an artifact of the truncation. And the comment here is that, yes, of course, there is a way to do that. It's not that difficult. And no locality can help in this sense. But before, let me just tell you what I mean with no locality here, at least in this talk, in this part of the talk. What I mean is basically that local Lagrangian will only have like Lagrangian with polynomials with finite order derivatives acting on fields. And in local Lagrangian, we will have also some additional terms where you can have non-polynomial operators. But of course, this is just this type of non-analytic operators are very common in standard perturbed QFT. What I have in mind here is to consider analytic non-local operators, not really of this type, but some exponential of entire function, as we will see later. And of course, this sometimes can also give some non-polynomially bounded amplitudes, if you look at amplitudes, yes, in the complex energy plane. So this is what I mean with no locality here. And so let's start just to explore. Once we give up locality, of course, we have lots more possibilities. So we can see the framework of quantum field theory, what is providing us, okay? And the idea is the following. We just start with a very simple like kinetic term of this type. And we make one assumption, just that this function here, the kinetic term, the kinetic operator, is an entire function. This is a sufficient condition to ensure that basically there is a good air limit. So because you want to eventually recover some low energy physics, like Gordon operator in this case. But just by the assumption of being an entire function, we can apply the Weierstrass theorem, which tells us that basically we can decompose the function f of box, of the operator f of box, in this form, where we have an exponential of an entire function, which does not introduce any zero pole here. And then we have the product of all possible zeros of this operator. Okay, n counts the number of zeros, which will be also the number of degrees of freedom in the end. And ri is also related to number of degrees of freedom and counts the multiplicity of each zero. That's just a statement of the theorem. And of course, once we have this expression, which is more general, of course, because we are giving up locality, we are going beyond, let's say, two for the reason and so on, we can compute the propagator, we will have some structure of this type, where again, we have like extra poles due to these zeros, and then we will have some exponential that appears here, okay? And the no locality, I would say, is contained here in this exponential. And of course, we can discuss like several cases. We have, very easily we can see, like if you take n equal to one, multiplicity equal to one, gamma equal to zero, we just recover the standard Klein-Gordon. If we go up with n, take n equal to two, we have the derivative with four, with 2 degrees of freedom, where we have a ghost and a healthy particle, which I showed before. And you can say, okay, if I can go higher and higher, in principle, if I stick with the real masses, I will generate anyway at least one pole, which has a negative residue. As long as, of course, n is finite. If n is infinite, something different could happen. But what we are really interested here, is basically this case, where we don't want to introduce any extra degree of freedom, because we don't want any ghost. And we won't still allow for extra structures. And in this case, what happens is that basically we have a kinetic term where there is the standard Klein-Gordon times some exponential of an entire function. which does not introduce any new pole, right? And if you want to compute the propagator, okay, the propagator will have this form, where we have only one single pole, and we have this extra exponential. Now, of course, this theory has been considered in the past, and several properties have been studied. One thing that may worry you immediately when you think of these exponentials is that since they are not polynomially bounded in the convex energy plane, you can have essential singularities, basically. And you may immediately ask, okay, how can we weak rotate? How can we define amplitudes and so on? But actually, there is a way we can define contour. There is a way then to deform the contour. And you can show that basically perturbative unitarity in this theory, well, with perturbative unitarity, I mean optical theorem and Kapotsky rules, hold. And the idea is basically to define amplitudes in Euclid and then weak rotate, not weak rotate, sorry, analytically continue to Minkowski in a certain way. Here I'm not showing details, not too much stuff. I have some extra slides in case there are questions about this fact. But it is possible to show that basically, not just at three level, but at higher looping perturbation theory, we can preserve perturbative unitarity. Of course, this is just the story with a scalar field. The question to ask, can we do something similar with gravity in the spirit of what I said at the beginning? And the idea is the following, basically. Like, we have some Einstein-Hilbert action, and then you want to add extra terms which can capture like these no-localities. And what we are going to require here is that we have analytic form factors. And of course, once you introduce this form factor, you also have to introduce some new energy scale, which will keep into account basically where new physics may appear, right? This no-local energy scale, let's say. But before going on, I would like just to mention one thing is that there have been many people working, and for sure I'm missing people here about this. But the main idea here, the main philosophy is that these form factors should not come from some perturbative higher loop computation, from some non-perturbative effects. The idea here is basically we start with some bare Lagrangian, which has this structure. So the classical Lagrangian has this structure. And then we try to quantize it. And this is a bit different from, for instance, the philosophy of isolated safety, where instead, still, form factors are very important, but in that case, they would come from, let's say, they would be derived from first principles, from some more perturbative computation, and they will appear in some effective action. So just to keep in mind the distinction, and actually, later in the next talk, Benjamin will tell us more about general aspects of form factor, not just isolated safety, no local gravity, but just general aspects and why they are useful in quantum gravity. And so the question here that we'd like to address now is the same as for the scalar field. Is there any choice for F1, so these form factors such that in the end we get some propagator for the graviton, which is ghost-free? And I mean, we'll just show the idea. And basically, let's consider, for instance, this type of Lagrangian, which would be just for if we take four factors constant, we would have the same quadratic for derivative theory that we showed at the beginning. And one can ask, okay, let's compute the propagator, okay? And the gauge fixing independent part of the propagator will have these two parts. There will be always a spin 2, a spin 0 part. And of course, if F0 and F2 are just like 1, we just have the GR propagator, where off shell you also see this extra spin 0, which is not on shell, of course, propagating. But the idea is now, can we choose some function for F2 and F0 here, such that we have a theory which is higher derivative, or even infinite derivative, but still without any pathological degree of freedom? And of course, we can do that as in the same spirit that we followed for the scalar field. And the idea is to basically impose some no ghost condition, where we assume that this function f naught f2 are exponential of some entire function. And for the spin zero part, we can also assume an extra pole without having any pathology. And for instance, if you want to look at the expression of our factor in the Lagrangian, we would have something like this, okay, where we have basically some analytic form factors up to like condition on this gamma 2 and gamma 0. And the one simplest case that sometimes considered, for instance, is this relation here, where you have only one independent form factor in this Lagrangian. In this case, you will only basically retain the degree of freedom of the massless graviton, but there will be some non-local effects through this exponential. Okay. So this is the idea, basically, of when people speak about ghost-free non-local Lagrangian, where at a really classical level, let's say, you start from some Lagrangian where you can basically kill the ghost in the perturbative PFT approach. And I mean, there is a lot to say, of course, but I will just make some comments. There is, in principle, an infinite class of viable entire function, right? Because we're just asking for an entire function, which means we don't want any extra degree of freedom. We don't want an extra pole, and we can, in principle, have infinite options. We can reduce this option, for instance, if we want to focus on our class of super normalizable models, but still you have an infinite class. And there have been also applications of this Lagrangian, like in astrophysical compact objects and also in early universe cosmology. And for instance, if you want to be consistent with the Starobinsky inflation and generalize it, yes, you also get a constraint on this mass scale in the theory. But the thing is that before thinking about application, I think one should really make a point about what is the current status here and what is my opinion. I think there are open issues still to address. And for instance, I mean, I've just spoken about quantum, perturbative PFT. I just defined the degrees of freedom like perturbativity. But you see, here we have infinite order derivatives. What is the Hamiltonian for an infinite order derivatives? There have been some ideas in the past, but up to my understanding, there is nothing conclusive. And it would be interesting to really make sense of an Hamiltonian for infinite order derivatives to understand like stability, non-perturbativity. Also, like, what happens if we go to higher loop and some propagators? Because it may happen that we get some extra complex conjugate poles, so we need to slightly modify contour prescription. And also, this could be done in general, but one should be really should really do some computation with rest propagator and see what really one gets. And there is still not full computation of that. And of course, we are giving up no locality. And what happens is that automatically we also break some causality. And this causality violation is expected to happen at this scale of MS that I showed before. But since the theory is relativistic, we should make sure that there is no violation of causality on the light cone. And there have been some way to quantify this violation of causality, but I think that more work should be done. But from my perspective, I think the main problem that should be addressed and try to understand, basically, is the following, because we have a huge freedom in the choice of the entire function. We have many possible theory in principle that could give some ghost-free gravitational theory. And how do we discriminate between them? Because experiments, of course, will not be able to do that. Even if there were many experiments, it's impossible to discriminate among so many theories. And for instance, one can ask maybe, could we derive some local Lagrangian from first principle? And I'm not referring to some like loop computation and so on where you get some effective action. Say like really putting some extra principle in the assumption in our quantum field theory approach and maybe get some unique Lagrangian. Well, I think this is still a main open problem. And I think, if there is no way to really discriminate between these theories, we cannot really do, let's say, we cannot really test this framework even if we address this problem here, right? Because we need some more unique descriptions. And having said so, this closes, the part of review that I was asked to do about non-local gravity. The idea was just to basically highlight the idea, okay? And we can discuss further later if you want. So in this sense, I covered this part of the approach where somehow the correspondence principle still applies, because you would say, classically, I don't have a ghost, because perturbatively, at least, I don't see that. And if I quantize the theory, I should not have this extra excitation, which would be pathological in the standard case, at least classically. Or now, I would like to go to the second approach, which is related to Bob Holden's talk and also to other experts here in the audience, like John Donoghue, Kelly Stella. And here is nothing, I mean, spectacular. I just want to make some comments, okay, referring to some of things that were said yesterday and also today. So the first point to make is that, again, I want to stress that the fantastic thing, I think, about locality and strict renormalizability, and of course symmetries, is that we really get a unique answer in four dimensions once we keep, okay, metric compatibility and so on. And this is the Lagrangian. So unlike, of course, the approach before where you can kill the cost classically, but you have many options, here you have one option. Okay, so this is in a way better because you can really think of like defining consistently the theory and then really try to probe it. If you get something that contradicts experiment, then you go back, throw the theory maybe, or change some of the starting assumption, but at least it's one theory with some free parameters. And what I would like here to discuss is just like four things. Like I would like to mention something about this thing between norm, positive norm, negative norm, and a causal propagation, a causal propagation. And something I would like to make a couple of comments on the classical limit. Five minus or five plus. I would like to make a comment also about backgrounds beyond flat space-time, and also a comment about the scattering amplitude, which is also referred to the previous talk, but I would like to give maybe a different opinion and it would be nice to discuss later. So, as I said before, if you take like positive norm and find a prescription for the propagator, of course you would get some violation unitarity in principle. But of course we can change something here. For instance, we can do what was said before by Holdom. This is just a three level. We can take some negative norm states for the ghost, and we can still have some condition which is respected, because you would have a negative left-hand side and a negative positive-hand side, or better, negative contribution from the one side and negative contribution from the other side that will compensate. But the other way would be like to still keep a positive norm, but get a causal propagation, which means that we choose the anti-Feynman prescription for the ghost, which some people may motivate in some way. And here again, you will have some ghost which is basically propagating positive energy, but backward in time. And also here, unitarity will be preserved because you will still have positive and positive here, because the sign of epsilon here will be negative and you will get something positive, at least at three level. Now, 3-4 minutes. We also heard that quantum mechanically, the ghost can decay, can be unstable, which means that it can get a width, okay? And sometimes, as I heard also yesterday, we think of this ghost just to be like, this decay can happen like at Planck scale and so on. But in principle, I think we just have a free parameter in the Lagrangian. We should try to understand when, I mean, at least, is this really a Planck scale physics? So could it be maybe pushed a bit further? And my comment here is that, for instance, if we want the mass of the ghost to be the highest that we have, which means even higher than the spin zero, degree of freedom in the gravitational theory, and we want the spin two, for instance, even to decay in the spin zero part, okay, one condition that we should assume is that M2 is greater than M0, and that if we assume the M0 to be useful for explaining inflation, okay, what you would get here, basically, is that you have an upper bound for the time scale of this, of the lifetime of this particle, which is, if I'm not wrong with the estimation, I did it last night, but it should be roughly 10 to the minus 28 seconds. Of course, this is just an upper bound. In reality, it could be just close to Planck scale. But at least by this, I would say that we are really still far from Planck scale physics. And this could happen, it could be that in the early universe cosmology, maybe some amplification of this somehow backward propagation could have some effect. I don't know how, but there could be maybe some implication if we are not very close to Planck scale, right? Because you see, we have anyway an extra degree of freedom here from the quantum gravity action, the R square, which is anyway far from Planck scale physics, and is giving new physics, right? So I would not be surprised if also from the Weyl square term, we may get some new physics still below the Planck scale. And usually here, what is said is that, the idea here is that we're having some a causal propagation, but could we have, for instance, like some causal propagation but still with some decay of the ghost. I think for me it's a bit strange to think in this way, because if we make a narrow width approximation here with a very small gamma, for instance, we would have, of course, a ghost which is propagating backward in time, positive energies, okay? But if at the tree level we take the Feynman prescription, we would have a ghost which propagates positive energies forward in time, okay? So I think to make the physics really consistent, we should be careful maybe. So the question here I would think to discuss even later, can we really have negative norm and causal this type of concept of like backward unstable particles? To me, it seems to be more consistent to just from the beginning stick to a causal propagation, which I think is also pointed out in the papers by Donoghue. I'll just take one more minute, a couple of minutes. And of course, in this case, we know that the ghost must be projected away from the Hilbert space, okay? Because if it decays, there is a well-known prescription by Veltman, very old, where he was just analyzing healthy particle, but the same can be applied. And one thing that we'd like to ask here is classical limit, because, okay, we could say the ghost decays, so I mean, it has its own quantum feature, so there is not really a way to define its classical limit. But I think a question to ask is, it's true that the ghost decays, has its own quantum features, but how is the classical dynamics of the other degrees of freedom affected by this quantum feature of the ghost? I think this is a question that should be analyzed. And for instance, if we just want to say, what is the classical limit? Of course, h bar equals zero is not a classical limit, because if we just get a zero width, an infinite decay time, and this is too naive, that's not a classical limit for sure. It's just a low energy limit. Again, I'm not sure, because even if we take QCD, and we take very high energy limit of QCD, somehow we can think of a classical wave approximation for the gluons, although it's not exact, but we can still extract maybe some type of classical physics at high energy. So, in my opinion, maybe to really discuss the classical limit, we should distinguish two timescale regimes, 1 minute, where basically we have a timescale regime like that is larger than the lifetime of the ghost. And in this case, of course, the ghost decays. And so we should find a way, also at the level of the field equation, to project classically the ghost away. So we should really solve the field equation for the ghost with some boundary condition which is consistent with this quantum projection, and then try to see how the equation for the other fields are affected. But of course, now, the same question can be asked, what happens instead at a time scale shorter than this tau when the ghost is still alive? In that case, it's still alive, can propagate, and we should make sure that no, let's say, no type of instability can appear. And maybe this regime could be analyzed with some energy limit, this is not clear. And also, there was some discussion about scattering amplitudes before, and I think this is an interesting point, because usually in standard model, when we ask for renormalizability, for instance, we take the WW scattering, we ask for renormalizability, and also we get an improved three-level scattering. And this is not the case if we just focus on a 2-2, for instance, scattering amplitude for gravitons, because despite renormalizability, at three level, we still have the same behavior as in GR. And I think this is maybe an indication that gravity is more special than other interaction, because we have somehow semi-classical objects that at some point maybe we should take into account, which are black holes. And maybe this feature may indicate that some non-perturbative effects must be taken into account. And last comment is that, of course, so far has been everything said about flat space, but what about more generic backgrounds? And what I find interesting here is that at least I can find a regime in which a non-zero cosmological constant can play a role. For instance, if you want to ask what is the beta going to infinity limit of this Lagrangian, which you can define by keeping the canonical normalized fields, you can immediately see that this limit, of course, has a different meaning if lambda is zero or non-zero, because you get a different limit for the mass, but also for the couplings. And actually, what you can show is that when lambda is zero, you get some result. When lambda is non-zero and positive, you get a theory where massless spin 2, LHT plus minus 2, and LHT plus minus 1 of the ghost decouple, while the mass spin 0 from the R square and the LHT 0 do not decouple. But they satisfy this equation with a constraint of this type. Okay, so This is just to say that maybe there is something more to take into account, even when we discuss the second part. And here, okay, I don't want to take more time. I had actually an extra slide about where I would expect anywhere in a locality, but we can keep that for the discussion. And yeah, I hope that, I mean, there could be some more discussion later about these topics. So thank you very much, and sorry for taking 3 minutes more. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Luca. We have time maybe for one question. I would ask one if there is none. So you mentioned that there are these form factors in non-local gravity that where in principle one has the freedom to choose the function gamma. But do you think they could somewhat be fixed by other constraints? So for instance, that the action, the flow of the action flows to a fixed point in the ultraviolet, and how would this, how constraining this would be?
Sure. I mean, so here, for instance, what I said is that I'm not making any assumption from the quantum regime. It was just at the classical level, try to ask, like, which condition shall we impose to make, like, some ghost free, to find some function which will not have any propagating, like, ghost-like degrees of freedom. And in principle, we can ask, okay, what happens if I ask more, even at the quantum level, for instance, some ultraviolet fixed point? In that case, I think there is, at least from this community on local gravity, no approach in this sense, okay? And I'm not, so I mean, I'm not even sure, because here you should say that you will have some, you should make some assumption about the UV fixed point, right? Because there you can have either a local Lagrangian or a non-local Lagrangian. So the idea here is that even at the level of the bare Lagrangian, you have these four factors. And sometime.
But the interpretation of fixed point would be that of Bayer Lagrange. So
yeah,
I was thinking that maybe this would.
So in this sense, indeed, if you start with, I don't know, local Lagrange UV fixed point, and you say, okay, what is the effective action that flows down and will give you something, that's more, I think, the speed of a semi-safety, where you will generate some local for factors. Here, I think there would be still like some freedom to say, okay, how to fix it, like, what is happening at the UV fixed point? So I think if you impose maybe some condition, you can restrict the class, and it would be nice whether you can have some more unique answers, but this I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Luca. Let's thank Luca again.
Okay, thank you.